You are now listening to the EU Startups Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the EU Startups Podcast. As always, I'm your host, David Senna-Garcia, the news editor here at EU Startups. If you're terminally ill, would you consider cryopreservation? That's the question that Emil Kenziora is looking to answer with his startup, Tomorrow.bio. Now, Tomorrow.bio is an interesting company because there really aren't many like it in Europe. In fact, according to him, they're the only one. They're, of course, specialists in cryopreservation for both humans and pets. And he was able to chat to me over these 30 or 40 minutes that we had the conversation over the evolution of the technology within Europe, how they offer what they offer, the intricacies of cost and process, and even the forward-looking nature of the technology and where he hopes the technology will be in 5 to 10 years from now. Of course, it's a very sci-fi sounding prospect, but just last year, they raised $5 million in funding. So it really is moving forward and it has a legitimate offering. I hope you're looking forward to that conversation. But before, a quick message from our sponsor, Fanta.
You're a startup founder. Finding product market fit is probably your number one priority, but to land bigger customers, you also need security compliance. And obtaining your SOC 2 or ISO 27001 certification can open those big doors, but they take time and energy, pulling you away from building and shipping. That's where Vonta comes in. Vonta is the all-in-one compliance solution, helping startups like yours get audit ready and build a strong security foundation quickly and painlessly. How? Vonta automates the manual security tasks that slow you down, helping you streamline your audit. And the platform connects you with trusted VCSOs to build your program, auditors to get you through audits quickly, and a marketplace for essentials like pen testing. So whether you're closing your first deal or gearing up for growth, Vonta makes compliance easy. Join over 8,000 companies, including many Y Combinator and Techstars startups, who trust Vonta. Simplify compliance and get $1,000 off at vonta.com/EU startups. That's vanta.com/EU startups.
Hello, Emil, and welcome to the EU Startups podcast. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Happy to be here.
Thank you. Yes, I'm very much looking forward to today's chat. It's not really something that we have very common here on the podcast, cryopreservation startup. It's not really anything that we've talked about before. So I'm looking forward to this chat with you, and I'm sure you have a lot to bring. So before we get started into the combo, I'll just give you a chance to present yourself, even though I've given a little sneak peek as to who you are and what you do.
Yeah, awesome. I'm Emil. By training, I'm a doctor. So I didn't technically start out as an entrepreneur, at least not that very traditional path. So I studied medicine to go into research. So this was my original plan, right? And research for what now is the kind of the longevity field, which now, of course, has been kind of like a hype topic over the last couple of years. But then after being in research and doing cancer research and so on, I got a bit disillusioned with how fast research is, or how slow, more precisely. And all my high school friends went either into computer science or into business school, right? So I had I then, since I didn't know what to do, I started companies with them. I had a small company during med school with my high school friends. That was a really relatively easy jump off point. So we built two companies, one data analysis company and one medtech company, but then sold both of them. Because in the last one, in like 2019 or so, I started thinking about, okay, now I want to get back to what I really want to do, which is this longevity topic. And then I left the company at the end of 2019, and then we sold it in early 2020. And since then, I've been running a cryopreservation company and a foundation and like multiple things in that field. And as you've mentioned, it's not an absolute standard topic, but it's very much a moonshot, for better or for worse.
Mm. Yes. Well, it definitely is very interesting. It's obviously what caught my eye and what made me interested in having you here in the first place. So I want to get into kind of the beginnings of it all. You've kind of mentioned that you've always had this drive for longevity and kind of innovation in that field. Can you tell me a little bit about why that is?
Yeah.
Is there a personal reason? What made you want to dedicate yourself to that?
Yeah. So the plan was always to start companies very early on, right? Like when I decided to study medicine and take that path when I was 17, maybe somewhere in that ballpark. I started at the end of 18, I started studying medicine. So I made that decision, and the years prior, I thought about, you know, what's the best path to do what I want to do. So my motivation has never changed since I'm like, you know, I don't know, 17, maybe even 16 or 15, somewhere in that relatively early, teenage years. Just the path of how I'm going towards what I want to do long term has changed and has adapted over time. But the original goal was always to try to figure out how I and others can live as long as they would like to. So this has always been my personal motivation. For whatever reason, it's not like my parents are still alive I didn't have this like, you know, aha moment, or at least nothing that I can remember in my teenage years, where I felt like dying is not a particularly great idea. But for whatever reason, I came to that conclusion, and I still hold that conclusion. I still believe that very much. So from the early childhood, teenage years, I never felt like I always enjoyed life, right? I would really like to see the future. I definitely am very excited about what will be possible from a technology standpoint, from a socio-economical standpoint, and so on. Mm-hmm. And last but not least, I strongly, strongly, personally prefer being alive to being dead. So
me too.
And right, most people, I think, if they think about it, there's very, very few people who say, hey, I'd rather be dead tomorrow than live another day, right? And at least if I predict how I will feel when I'm 15, 16, 17, 80, and maybe even 90 or 100, right? I think it's going to be very unlikely for me that at some point I'm going to say, hey, I'd rather... I mean, if you have crazy amounts of pain, okay, so sure, maybe then you might change your mind. But if everything goes kind of well, I think I will never change my mind. But of course, medically, right, and this was kind of the original the original plan, medically, that's not possible. Like, you know, and almost everybody, and very, very few people make it to the age of 90. And so this was the original plan, and the goal, the plan originally was to go into med school, do an MD, then kind of during half, once I'm like add on a PhD program, then do an MD PhD program, and then kind of have the experience to do the basic science part, but also the translational science part, how to implement the stuff that you do in basic science, how to implement that into clinical practice, and then build a company around that that actually makes that work. And then offers, you know, the pill, the treatment, you name it. I don't know exactly what, but offers the thing that then lets people live how long they would like to live. That was the original plan. Yeah. And then, as I said, like some deviations over time.
Sure. Well, you've mentioned that you've had experience in other companies, both founding and exiting. According to my notes here, they were Medlanes and On Feedback, is that right?
Yeah. I built a few more companies. So I started early, again, during med school, but those were not startups. Those were more like, you know, how people start out, you know, building web pages. Later, and we did enterprise development, like we had an outsourcing company and so on. But these were not startups, more companies. But this was what funded my first startup. And that was On Feedback, which was a data analysis company.
Okay. So then, and I want to quote here that your webpage, because this line kind of really stood out for me. It has to do with what we're talking about here. In the Meet the Team section, it says under you, he has no intention of ever starting another company and considers tomorrow.bio his life's work. That's the quote. So, you know, why is it that you see this as your life's work? Because you've had experience building other companies and you know, you have a knack, you have an interest. What makes you say, no, this is it?
Yeah. So the other companies, they were always stepping stones towards that goal that I just laid out, right? So my goal is to figure out how to not die, right? which, of course, I'm the first to admit that this is not an easy problem, right? By any means. So the other companies I started, because when I was in the last year of med school, now I had an understanding of how easy or how difficult research is, right? I've been in research at that point have been in research for a few years, and unfortunately, at that point, I was significantly less optimistic than maybe I was when I started out with med school, right? Or starting out with research. It's just really, biology is really, 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 really hard, right? Yeah. For a variety of reasons, right? And so at that point, I didn't find anything where I felt like, okay, so this actually has high impact towards that goal that I have and or had and still have. So I started those companies not because I was particularly personally super motivated for data analysis, but it was a relatively easy point to get into the game, to learn how to build companies, to build skills and so on. And then the next one after that, so that the first one we sold to Question Pro in the US and in Austin and Texas. The second one then we started, which was this medtech company or digital health back then was a big topic, right? The telemedicine and house calls and so on. My co-founder was a computer scientist. I was a doctor at that point, right? So kind of good connection and we had built companies before together. But again, also a medtech company or like a digital health company was not necessarily what I wanted to do for a very long time. It just felt at that point like, you know, this will be the next big thing. And that will be something that we can then relatively soon, relatively sell relatively expensively, which medtech, you know, the whole field developed significantly slower than we thought back then. Yeah. Right. So we still sold it in 2020, but it was not as big as we thought the field did not develop even remotely as fast as we thought. And so I the reason why I'm now saying this is a company that I do not want to sell, right, is because or has become over the last couple of years, and I've been, of course, following the longevity field while running these other companies. This is for around almost 10 years now. This is the best bet I see. And for around like 6 years or so now, I'm running this company. And of course, by now, I'm good friends with basically everybody in longevity, like from all the biotech companies in the US and almost everybody who's involved in that field in some capacity. I have not found anything better yet. Anything better towards actually living significantly longer. There's stuff that might make you live healthy. And there's definitely stuff that, you know, where you can might still, where you have a higher chance of being able to run a marathon when you're 75. But I have not found anything that has a good chance of making you live longer or allowing you to live longer. So cryopreservation and what I'm doing at Tomorrow Bio is the best bet in that regard. So it's not a company that I'm running because I want to sell it off and make a buck and like whatever, right? This is a company where I'm interested in the mission, and it's a personal, deep intrinsic motivation to make this company work. To be fair, once that company works, and if that company works, it's gonna be really, really big business at the same time. But what I'm not gonna do, you know, if someone comes around and offers me $50 million for the company, then I'm gonna say, yeah, thank you, but no thanks. So that's kind of the difference. Like this is not a company that I want to quickly sell and, you know, have an exit or whatever. This is for all intents and purposes a do or die company, both for the mission and from a financial standpoint.
Okay, so there's a lot of questions I have from everything you've said, and I'm gonna kind of jump the gun on one that I think stands out to me the most, even though I guess it would be jumping forward in the conversation we would naturally get there. But I do want to ask, you know, isn't it all still theory? Because you've said, you know, this is all going to be so big when it works. But how will we know when it works, right? Yeah. Because you've cryopreserved patients, I'm imagining terminally ill people. So there must be, so do you have a checklist, right? It's like, okay, we have advancements in cancer that says it will cure this one. Oh, we have a patient who was terminally ill from this. great, let's address this now. You know, how in the near future is that? Will we be able to see it, do you think?
So from a company perspective, I would say that currently there are three types of it works. Okay. One is from a financial standpoint, right? From a unique economic standpoint, cryopreservation is good to okay to really good business, right? So once we have, you know, I don't know, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, maybe 100,000 people sign up for cryopreservation, it becomes really good business from a unique economic standpoint. Right.
Okay.
So for that, we technically don't need to even have any. It doesn't need to work yet, as in we can revive anybody. Right. And for those of you who might not be super deep in cryopreservation, the idea of cryopreservation is basically that stuff that you know from science fiction movies, right? Where if you want to fly to another star, you freeze down, even though it's not freezing, you put them into cryostasis, right? And then you wake them up once you reached another star. In our world, of course, here this is not for space travel. Space travel primarily, even though this might be a use case down the line, it's more so if people, you know, when you're 40 or 50, you get terminal cancer, the doctors tell you have 6 months to live, and then you can choose either you want to be cremated or buried, or you want to be cryopreserved, right? And then more and more people say, I would rather be cryopreserved for the chance that medical technology in the future has advanced enough to be able to cure the cancer and to reverse the process so I can live on.
Right.
So that just as a short side note. The second it works is once it starts working in animals, right? So if once we can cryopreserve a rat or a mouse, like, you know, that's normally how biotech research is being done, right? You do the research in mice and then at some point it works and then you go into clinical trials. At that point, it would probably be big business in regards that investors who join early can do good secondaries. We would still not sell the company at that point. But at that point, once you can do this in mice, cryopreservation has the unique advantage against other biotech companies that if it works in rats or mice, it's probably very easy to scale it up to humans at that point. So very easy, you know, in relative terms. So,
sure.
But once that works, you could probably have good secondary opportunities. And then really works means you can put someone into cryostasis and you can resuscitate, revive them from cryostasis. To be fair, that might be decades out, right? And I'm not making claims if it's like 2 decades or 8 decades. This is not easy. This is by any means, this is very difficult. We usually have investors invested in us who have a significantly longer, you know, investment horizon than typical VC funds. So it's more like family offices, evergreen funds, ultra high net worth people, billionaires, and so on.
Yeah.
But these are the kind of the three steps how it works. Financially, if a lot of people sign up, from a biotech standpoint and from a traditional biotech kind of how projects progress, if you can do it in rats or mice, and then in humans would be, of course, the holy grail. And then, you know, once you can bring people back from the dead, you know, and it's going to be probably a $1 trillion company at that point. Because then you literally revive someone, right? But again, I'm making no claim of if that's going to be, you know, anytime soon.
Okay. And what kind of assurances are there that you can give to customers in terms of, the reason why I heard about you was it was last year, $5 million that you raised and I covered and I said, oh, it's such an interesting company. We should maybe think about. So you're obviously getting funding, right? And in terms of people that are, I have here 20 cryopreserved patients. I don't know if that statistic is correct.
By now it's like 30 something, but
okay,
yes, like it's not
something.
Like hundreds yet, but it's
right.
Like, so it's more than 1,000 people signed up now.
Yes.
Right. Each cryopreservation is 200,000 euros. So that's you know, a bit north of 200 million in contract volume. And then in actually cryopreservation, 30 something by now.
Okay. So then what kind of guarantees do you have to these people? Because you are a company and, you know, God forbid, maybe a bus and you don't get enough funding or whatever, you can't convince people to sign up, whatever the reason, what guarantees are there to somebody who's going to be cryopreserved within your facilities or organization?
Yeah. So all people who are in long-term cryostasis with us, they're legally not with the company anymore. They're with a nonprofit foundation in Switzerland. And there's like a foundation structure with an asset management foundation and a non-profit foundation, which I also started. So I'm on the board of both of them. So it's
right,
not like random
foundation. European Biostasis Foundation.
Yeah, one
right?
is the okay. European Biostasis Foundation. The other is called the Patient Care Foundation. So these are custom designed foundations for the purpose of keeping people in cryostasis long term. So
okay.
Legally, one of those, the Patient Care Foundation, is the legal guardian over the people who are in cryostasis. Nevertheless, cryopreservation is not a guarantee. It's neither a guarantee from a medical standpoint. Currently, you cannot revive someone from cryostasis, right? It's impossible to do that. It relies on future technology. It is, of course, possible that, you know, whatever, if there's like nuclear war in the future, right? Who knows if the facility in Switzerland and all of that stays around, right? So I think if you think about cryopreservation as a guarantee, that's kind of the wrong approach to take it. So I think the better approach to think about this is, depending on your personal worldview, and definitely my personal worldview and philosophy, if I'm being cremated or buried, there is no coming back from that. The chance to be revived and brought back from cremation is zero, or at least as close as you can be to zero, right? A theoretical zero, right? At the very least, cryopreservation gives you a better chance, right?
Yes.
And now I can't tell you how high that chance is, but I'm very happy to defend that it's better. And my job is now to stack the deck in your favor with research, with better governance, with like checks and balances, with prudent long-term financial planning, with governance structures that are built to last, for argument's sake, decades, if not centuries, and so on. So by and large, it is stacking the deck in your favor, but not a guarantee. Because again, you cannot currently guarantee it, because of course I do not know, you know, how the world will look in 20 years, in 30 years, in 50 years, maybe in 100 years. But the chance is better. Like basically it's the question, like, you know, you have a terminal disease, right? And someone comes to you and says, hey, I have this new clinical trial that might give you a chance, right? And now you can say, do you want to be in the placebo group or do you want to be in the intervention group? Do you want to be the control group or do you want to be the intervention group? Like another example that is sometimes being used, right, is, you know, on a plane and the plane is crashing. Like it's definitely hitting the ground. Now someone comes to you and says, listen, hey, I have this very experimental parachute here. Has never been worked, never been tried. We don't know. Right. But do you want one? And then I'm definitely taking one. Right. So it's more so, again, depending on personal worldview, do you want to go for clear doom or do you want to take the chance? I think, right. And then again, I can't tell you how high the chances, but it is better.
Okay. And you mentioned the price point there, and I think that's an interesting topic conversation too, because from what I saw, so whole body preservation for members is 200,000, just brain is 75, and the non-members is 230,000, and then 115,000 for brain for non-members. That's an obvious wealth barrier, of course. It's understandable. It's a new technology. It's an experimental technology. Would you want to see, if all of a sudden it becomes a truly darn company, like you're saying, would you want this kind of expanded and that wealth gap kind of reduced?
Absolutely. In fact, it's one of the three goals of the company. So we have three goals: making cryopreservation better from a quality standpoint, making it more accessible, and making it more affordable. So luckily, all the costs of cryopreservation they scale down with the economy of scale tremendously. The problem of why cryopreservation is currently so expensive is because there's more super yachts in the world than people signed up for cryopreservation. So it is currently, you know, if you want to be on the absolute forefront of, you know, the avant-garde of the bleeding edge of technology, then just get a cryopreservation contract. So it's very few people currently decide for cryostasis, because it's a relatively new topic. It's not many people know about it. Not many people know that it actually can be done, and so on and so on. So nevertheless, the cost can go down once more people do it to at least somewhere in the 25,000 range. Initially, we started out just doing whole body cryopreservation. We added on brain cryopreservation, even though we would always recommend whole body. We added on brain cryopreservation because it is currently the only way how we can make it significantly more affordable without jeopardizing quality. Nevertheless, down the line, my hope would be that we can offer this significantly more affordable. And the three main costs that we have, which is equipment and cryoprotective agents, long-term storage, and personnel, all of that goes down significantly once more people do it. Because currently I have medical teams, doctors, perfusionists, and so on. I have them standing around for 300 days a year, in quotation marks, and they just keep up and train and whatever, right? Because not so many people do it. And of course, if you can split that cost over more people, cost would go down. Same for liquid nitrogen consumption. It's basically a factor of how much surface area do you have to volume. And if you increase the location where these low temperature storage is being done, the consumption goes down by surface area, but volume then allows you to store much, much more and you have less consumption. So long term, you can offer this much, much more affordable. Currently, it is still relatively expensive. Nevertheless, it's also important for me to say that people don't pay, usually at least, they don't pay that money out of pocket. We work with large life insurance providers. So in almost all cases, people take out life insurance and then we are the beneficiary of that life insurance policy.
I see.
Right? And so you can fund cryopreservation in that way.
Okay. And what's the benefit of only cryopreserving your brain? Is that also for some future technology where you could input a brain into a robot or a humanoid? What's the idea there?
Pretty much. I try to never make any definitive statements about the far future because, what do I know, right? What's going to be possible in 50 years? But the fundamental, the logic here is that as much as we currently understand, everything that we value, personality, identity, consciousness, everything that makes me, me, and makes you, you, right, is in our brains. We ran a big study a while ago where we asked a lot of neuroscientists, and the overwhelming majority is that yes, that's the case. So, and of course we kind of know this. Hearts can be transplanted, lungs can be transplanted. You can switch out a lot of the body parts, whereas the brain, just conceptually, you can't switch it out. So as long as you have the brain, for all intents and purposes, you have the parts that are unique. And now, at least it is imaginable that in the future you will be able to 3D print organs and potentially the rest of the body, right? Again, I strongly would suggest whole body. The only reason why we do brain is to give people an option if they would say, I cannot afford whole body. The choice is basically I don't do anything. I go cremation or burial, or I do brain only. I think in that case, it makes a lot of sense to do brain only because at least conceptually we have ideas how a body could be 3D printed, right? Mm-hmm. That's not going to be super soon, but once you have enough time, I'm not seeing any fundamental reason why this should not be possible at some point. And the trick, of course, with cryopreservation is once you're at these cryogenic temperatures, time doesn't matter anymore. You can wait, if it's 10 years, fine. If you need to wait 50, that's also okay. If it takes 200, no worries. In theory, you can stay in that temperature at cryogenic temperatures for thousands and thousands of years. Nothing happens. So you can just wait it out until future technology has caught up. Nevertheless, we would always recommend whole body.
Okay. Well, previously you mentioned that you're involved in founding the European Biostasis Foundation and all these initiatives within Europe. And I know that I previously read that you used to be signed up with the American offering, which is Alcor.
Yeah.
Alcor.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why did you see the need for a European version if you already felt that there was an American one and it seemed to be interesting enough for you to initially be involved with it?
There are two main reasons for that. So, I was just their customer, right? So I was not really involved. I was just their customer. But nevertheless, cryopreservation is it's not an easy topic, right? It's I could make way more money somewhere else. So it is a bit of why? So there's two main reasons. One is cryopreservation from a medical infrastructure standpoint, mm-hmm. it needs to be done quickly. If something would happen to me right now here in Europe, I signed up with them, I asked them how does this work? And the answers were kind of like, yeah, don't worry about it. And at some point I felt like there's definitely something to worry about. In fact, they don't have medical teams in Europe, right? So there's no way of them being able to do that procedure quickly if I need it. Mm-hmm. That's one reason. And by now, of course, I know them much, much closer. So all the other cryopreservation organizations that are relevant in the world, they have been around for 50 plus years. So this is not a new topic by any means. And I think the best way to kind of think about it is, taxis have been around for a very long time before Uber came around. Mm. And now technically you could say, well, Uber, taxis, same thing, same value proposition. What's the difference? But then again, I don't remember when I used a taxi last. And I think a lot of people who are a bit more app-based and whatever, there is a significant difference in the experience. And by now, there's also significant, at least in our case, by now there's a significant difference in the quality of preservation. So we do much, much more quality checks. And on average, both the top and on average, we show much better quality than other organizations do. So by now, I don't think these legacy organizations, I don't even really consider them a competitor anymore. Like, we grow 20 times faster than they do. They have a 50-year head start, but from a growth trajectory, from a quality standpoint, from a growth rate, from a satisfaction rate, it's not the same. It's not the same ballpark anymore. We have significantly better quality. We grow 20 times faster than they do, and so on. So I think my decision was more so accessibility of medical teams and quality of preservation, where I felt like maybe there needs to be a new player in the field.
I think you're right that you've done work, I think, in kind of making it serious again, because when I first came across the story, it just seemed like, Walt Disney Atomic Age thing, where it's absurd, yeah. Really. No, I
don't think even Walt Disney is even cryopreserved. I think this is like
infected.
I don't think, like, we had a blog post in the very beginning on our blog, and this was the most clicked webpage on all of everything. But I think it's purely, as far as I know, I mean, maybe there's some secret whatever under Disneyland or whatever. But I think it's an urban legend. But of course, you're right. Like, this cryopreservation was always this topic on the edge between science fiction and science. We have now moved it, and also sometimes, like, at least in the past, contentiously discussed, right? Now, since we've been around and some new organizations starting up, it has been moved significantly more into, this is an option that people can seriously consider and then make up their mind if this is something they want to do. And some people might say, no, this is not something that I want to do. And that's, of course, also totally fine. But then other people might say, well, why not? Right? This is not something you do early. You do it once all the other medical interventions have failed. Right? No one needs to say, tomorrow I want to be cryopreserved. No, you try everything else. And then only once the doctors say, we have tried everything, your cancer is still incurable, and then, in fact, the doctors have pronounced you like that, then we immediately take over. Right. Yeah. So, and then again, for a lot of people, even though 200K is a good chunk of money, for a significant part of population, if they really want to do it, they are able to fund it. And then it only comes down if this is something you want to do.
Okay. We're on the topic here of Europe and, the way of moving that forward within this continent. I had a quick look. Obviously, I can't really compare you to any other company. Usually, this podcast, I could say, I could say, oh, well, there's these other companies, and how do you feel about the competition? I can't really ask you that here. But what I can ask you, and I think it's important, is that, well, for some background, we tracked in terms of kind of health optimization companies, which is, I guess, the broader umbrella I can fit you in. We tracked in this past year, we've seen around 34 million euros come and go in terms of funding for these kinds of initiatives. So does being one of these select few companies that do what you do, is that a plus for you? Or would you like to see more companies kind of enter the landscape and enter the broader European Biostasis Foundation?
Yeah, no question. So we would like, so we don't have a competitor problem, right? Mm. In fact, there's zero companies that we are aware of in all of Europe that do what we do. Mm. There's worldwide a couple new ones starting out, but our problem is not competition. Our problem is market education and you know, market penetration and all of that. So I would have a strong preference for a couple of organizations that would start in that field, right? That would help the whole field, that would build the field, that would make it more serious and so on. In fact, we're supporting a couple of smaller companies, right? I've invested in, like, I usually don't do angel tickets. I'd rather start companies, which I do sometimes on the weekend on the side. But I of course, don't run them. I would definitely like to have more companies in that space. Since we're, of course, if you take longevity, because you said health optimization field, right? Longevity has become a very, very broad spectrum, right? Mm. From supplements to skin lotions to towards biotech, and then somewhere on the other side of the spectrum, that's where we are, right? Uh-huh. So we're very much. So usually when we meet investors, the conversation is either I'm in or I'm out. This is not like, yeah, you know, but who's the competition and whatever, right? It's more almost a binary decision. This is something I want to do. This is something I feel like is cool. I might even want to do it myself, right? Or I definitely want to do it myself. And then I'm in. Unfortunately, yeah, our competitor slide is not an extensive slide. And it's there isn't, unfortunately, much.
So then is there kind of niche areas that maybe you'd like to see more explored within kind of, you know, cryopreservation? Yes. I mean, because the pets thing stood out to me. That was interesting because I saw you had, and again, these might be old numbers, but 10 pets cryopreserved, right? And you've mentioned how you begin with animals and then you move to humans. So is there maybe a niche area there?
The other way around. We started with humans and then moved to pets. There is one organization that is a meaningful startup in the US that does pet cryopreservation, pure pet cryopreservation. But good friends of us, so we'll collaborate with them on a variety of topics. There's a good amount of angles that you can take in cryopreservation. You can take the organ biobanking angle, right? Make organs available or research how to cryopreserve organs so that you can make organs available for transplantation. Right, it's of course a bit of a different biotech play, but might be very interesting. Right, you can take the pet angle, go for pets, and of course there's a lot of people who, after having lived with their pet for 10 or 15 years, they consider that pet part of the family, right? And so they might consider cryopreservation. The human cryopreservation angle, for argument's sake, is probably the most difficult one, but at least for me, it's also the most exciting one. You can also take an angle that comes from cells, like, you know, just doing cell cryopreservation, all of which we will only do. Like, if our research teams find something interesting, we would always try to spin that out as a separate company. So we're hardcore, mission-aligned, moonshot, mission-driven organization. We would not pivot. So we tell all of our investors, listen, we're not pivoting. Like, if I'm sitting around here in a few years with like two people on the team, because no one wants to invest in this organization for whatever reason, because now it's not a cool topic anymore, so be it. I sit around with those two people and wait out until we can raise more money or whatever, right? If we find something interesting that is kind of adjacent, we would spin it out. All of these fields, if someone would want to found something, I would be very excited.
Okay. I have to ask then, if you were faced with a terminal illness, would you sign up for what you're offering here? Would that be something you're interested in?
Not without a second thought.
Okay.
Like, it's not even a question for me. Like my worldview, like, you know, if I die, right, I do not have any evidence to believe that there's anything but nothing. Mm. Right. And again, I do enjoy living much more than I would enjoy being dead. And I definitely want to see tomorrow. And I definitely want to see in 10 years and maybe also in 100 years, right? At least I want to always have the optionality to say I would like to live another day. And if I'm being diagnosed with a terminal condition that is currently incurable and inevitably will lead to my death, I think it's a binary choice. Do you want to be cremated or buried, or do you want to be cryopreserved? You need to, unfortunately, you need to choose one of those two things.
Yeah.
Right. And my choice is 100% clear. I will always get cryopreservation before I go for cremation. Mm. Right. And yeah, I mean, otherwise, to be fair, I wouldn't run this organization again. There would be more money to be made somewhere else. It would be easier somewhere else, and so on. So I think there's a good amount of intrinsic motivation required if you want to do, if you want to do startups in the first place, but then especially if you want to do a startup that is a company that is in kind of one of these more moonshotty fields.
Okay. Well, we're approaching the final question here, and then I'll let you go to do what you do best. We've talked so much here about it kind of being a little bit on the fringe of medical science, and how you want to work towards pushing that more to the center and getting more people to know about it, get more people to sign up. In your opinion, what needs to happen on that level? Is it just more people knowing about it, or does there need to be certain medical milestones that need to be reached for this to be seriously taken as a serious option?
Yeah. So by the way, everything that's interesting is slightly on the end of the spectrum, right? The moonshots, I would not want to run normal companies anymore, right? I want to do stuff that is pushing, you know, boundaries in a positive sense. The moonshot, the stuff that really would have high impact. So it's a combination. So to get to, let's say, 100,000 or so people signed up, right? If 100,000 people pay you 200,000 euros, you know, it's already good business at that point, right? And $50 a month as a subscription fee in addition. Mm-hmm. So to get to that point, it's probably only figuring out how to communicate this topic in a way where more people say, I want to do this now. Because when you ask people, we ran like large studies, and of course, studies always need to be taken with a grain of salt, but around 20% of population in Europe and in the US says, this is my end of life choice. Given the options, I'd rather do this than the alternatives. Mm-hmm. Of course, 20% of population is, you know, it's way above the 100K people that I just mentioned. So to go significantly higher, and this is of course why we also do research, it's if you can show that it works in mice, that you have more data and so on, probably helps, even though unfortunately, I think usually most people don't make decisions that much on, you know, what does the scientific literature say, like, you know, what paper has been published. So I think it's more a communication. And then it's kind of like a bit of, you know, everything. Like once it becomes, it's a self-fulfilling thing, or like a flywheel kind of thing. Once there's more data, more people think about it, more people talk about it. There's more key opinion leaders from research and medicine that are involved in it. Like, you know, then the first, I think Paris Hilton said that she definitely wants to sign up for cryopreservation, right? So
we'll have her on next then.
Please do, and let me know what she says. Once more of that group of people, then, you know, celebrities and stars sign up, and then it kind of gets this flywheel where more people say, listen, why not? Like, what's the downside? I mean, the downside is you pay 200,000 euros. But apart from that, you know, if it doesn't work, nothing, you don't have any disadvantage. And if it works, and you would like to see the future, then you definitely have a big advantage. So in my mind, it's, every day of the week, I would rather do cryopreservation than cremation.
Got it. Well, thank you very much, Emil. It's been a pleasure to have you on. I could keep chatting. I want to give my video editor, I don't want to make his day bad by turning in a 2-hour long episode.
No.
But I do. I am quite enjoying the conversation. There's so much to chat about, and I'm sure we're going to be seeing more of you. You know, you're raising funding. You did so good last year, and we'll be looking forward to any new advancements from you.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right, thanks for inviting me. Yes, it's been a pleasure chatting. Talk soon.
Thank you. Talk soon.